Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another special of the Box Set Pod, hosted by me, Howell, with no Jamie due to his ongoing struggle to raise a human being. I tried to call him on the phone this week and it went straight to answer phone. Jamie wouldn't normally answer, but it wouldn't be turned off. I can only imagine the apocalypse that is Jamie's house as his child is 1 week old. Frightening stuff. He will join us again in the next few weeks, I'm sure. But tonight, another special. This is a spoiler special. Spoiler alert, this whole podcast will be talking about the entirety of The West Wing. Joining me this evening is, live from London, Matthew Wandless. Good evening, Matthew.
Good evening, Howell.
Well, this is exciting. Just finally, the two real stars of the Box Set Pod.
Exciting. There's something very sensual.
I know
about this podcast. I'm sort of the lighting's low in here, and I've got a glass of wine.
I've lit some candles.
Feels like something's going to happen.
Ironically, this isn't the podcast I'm naked. The podcast I was naked was back when it was too hot to.
I think it's better to leave them wanting more. I think if you just go straight in naked, that's just, you know, you take away all the allure.
Yeah. You have to tell me if you hear my microphone go weird during this podcast, because last week it did with Jack, and I only noticed afterwards. It was very.
Oh, okay. I will do. Yeah, and you're probably going to hear my cat at some point because she's. She's being very forceful right now. She's sort of come over to me and she's demanding attention.
There's high drama already on the podcast. Yeah. This is a great tease forward. The West Wing. I think it is not news to anybody that this is one of our favourite box sets of all time. Definitely in my top three, getting on the spaceship. How about you?
Absolutely, yeah, 100%.
Where would you put it? I mean, if you could only take one box set to space, would it be the West Wing?
I think it would be.
Wow, I think so too.
Although, which is not to say that I think it's the best series out there. That I wouldn't give it that, but I think it is my favorite. It's the most rewatchable for me, and I would take it.
And how would you define favorite versus best?
Well, it's like I can objectively say that, say, Doctor Strangelove is maybe the best film.
Yeah,
I've seen. I think it's incredible, but I wouldn't want to watch it every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I'd take Star Wars, like, anywhere.
Right, right. Which brings us back to conversations around what is good, what is popular, and what is good
quality.
That is a fascinating thing, because I am currently balls deep into Community, thanks to your recommendations and others. And my God, what a TV series. It's brilliant.
Isn't it good, yeah?
Yeah, and that's a good example of one that I would seriously have to consider taking with me, I think.
That's become that popular for you.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's just great. If only others on this podcast would have delved into Chuck as deeply as I have delved into Community.
You know, not wanting to get sidetracked too much, but I actually did delve back into Chuck.
You said you did a few weeks ago. Go on.
Yeah, but I've watched the final episode of series one and the first three of series two.
Okay.
And it's not going well, Howell.
It's not going well.
I'm afraid. I've decided I'm going to give it the four episodes of series two, and then if something magical doesn't happen, I'm done.
Okay. I think it's a balance of not expecting too much from it, which kind of brings us on to the West Wing, because I've currently signed up to Aaron Sorkin's Masterclass, which for $90 you can watch about 15 hours worth of Aaron Sorkin teaching you how to write a screenplay.
Interesting.
It is very interesting, but what it strikes me immediately that it's a waste of $90 for me, because I'm trying to write TV comedy, and His whole thing is about, for him, it's not about creating characters first, it's about creating a discussion first, creating an argument. And the characters come out of that argument. They serve whatever the objective is for your main character, for example.
Okay.
Other characters will then serve that. He's not into big, lengthy character kind of biographies and thinks that's a waste of time. It's all about ideas and the discussion and the debate of ideas. And that is, you know, when you watch him speak, you just go, well, this is what makes The West Wing great. And it's what makes that subject great. But it wouldn't work if he was writing Community. And that's perhaps why he hasn't written something like Community. Because Community, you do start with seven clearly defined characters. You introduce them all on the first page in some easy way. And then you create an obstacle and then you solve the obstacle. You know, it's kind of a bit more simple. And that's where The West Wing screeches to us, although now perhaps we remember it as more populist and less worthy than, say, The Wire and things like that, that in style are much more difficult. When you watch it again, you realise just how much, especially now Trump's elected, just how much it really is about arguing the arguments about what makes America great and how we make this great country into the great country that it is in a blueprint, you know?
Yeah.
So we haven't spoken since Donald Trump got elected, by the way.
No, we haven't.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. How are you feeling?
I don't know, to be honest. I saw a very good, what's the guy called who does, he's like, he plays a roving reporter character who sort of speaks to the camera off camera, if you see what I mean.
I know the guy.
I can't remember what his name is.
Yeah,
it's Jeremy,
I've seen that as well. Yeah, he's a fake.
Jeremy Pye or something like that.
He's a fake. It's a character, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And he did a great one about how this is what the left deserves, for fucking things up, and for being so intolerant and so condescending,
arrogant,
and
a lot like Brexit, I think.
Yes,
like a lot like Brexit of going.
Yeah,
you don't. I mean, it's been my soapbox for a long time of saying to people, look, but this is where
it's actually, you know what? It's an argument, and not to just try and be too segue heavy, but yeah. It's an argument that is raised in The West Wing.
Yeah,
in series three,
mm-hmm.
when they're in the wake of the president's MS scandal.
Mm.
And they go out to his farm in Manchester and they bring in the speechwriters. Sorry, not the speechwriters. It actually is speechwriters. From with Bruno Gianelli and that guy Doug, who's in Sex and the City, and what's her face from Friday Night Lights come in.
Yeah.
They focus on this thing about how the liberal left elitist can be taken down by the plain spoken homeland jock.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's really interesting because he says, Doug says to Toby, he says, you're always educating the public. You're never more happy than when you're educating the public.
Mm.
And it does ring very, very true.
It does. And where that guy's that I watched that speech you're talking about from the fake reporter, and I agree with everything he's saying. But it was also in the backlash. We had this hangover, didn't we? A lot like Brexit. Of the day after, it was like, for people around the world, it was deeply personal. It was like being dumped by the love of your life. It was just awful. And then since then we see things like him and we see writing, and I the only thing I'd say against his argument are two things, really. One is the liberal left also managed to argue themselves out of any situation to make them feel better. And this is an example of that. So we actually go, well, it's not going to be so bad, and here's why it's not going to be so bad. And historically, this is an important thing. America swings left to right and da-da-da-da. Somebody on the right who lost, if Brexit had gone the other way or if Trump had lost, somebody on the other side wouldn't be going, well, this is important. They wouldn't be liberally philosophical about it. They would go, this is shit, and they'd get angry and they'd take arms in some way, or they'd be pissed off. And I'd say that to him. And the second thing I'd say to him is, I don't think it is necessarily a massive... I think it is all of the flaws that he described of presuming that Hillary could be elected and all of that. But I actually think what we saw with Nigel Farage and what we saw with Brexit and what we saw here is something that I understand really well, and you do, as people who understand performance. And having been on the radio and talked to the public who voted Brexit, they were my audience for years. And I always said, if I went on the radio and I implied a little bit of racism, my listening figures would double. And I never did, because I didn't want to be that person. I have morals and I have ethics. But if I did do that, it would work, because the vast, not the vast majority, but a large number of people have been left behind by globalization. People who can't travel that much, people who don't have access to inner city education, people who live in poor areas and can't access the internet as much. These people have a genuine gripe around globalization. They see, if you live in a small town in America where the factories closed down, and you also see immigration in the news a lot, and you see immigration happening around you, and jobs going to younger people and people who are a different color from you, because they're willing to be paid less and because they're immigrants, you've got a genuine gripe there that goes, well, globalization is fine, you're all moving forward, we're left standing still. And there's a performer there that, if they stand up like Farage did and they just connect, they just, no matter how much of an asshole they appear to be, they appear to mean what they say. They don't appear to be talking politics, which is where Jeremy Corbyn does struggle, because although he might be making arguments which are intellectually for the people, he doesn't make you want to go out and have a pint with him, and he doesn't make you want to go and stand in a stadium and cheer for him. So if you want to engage those people, it's not just about looking at yourself and blaming yourself. It's also about being saying, I'm not going to change someone's mind. I'm not going to educate somebody into being not racist. They're probably going to stay racist. And if, instead of putting Hillary Clinton up, we put Tom Hanks up, we'd probably win. And it comes down to really simple casting whilst respecting their situation. You know, don't think you can educate them, but do think that you can get somebody who they are a fan of to talk to them, who can connect with them. That's what I think.
Okay.
I wish we did. I think that the one major thing that the last year is going to change about politics is that the kind of spin world is going to realise that it isn't just about how you write a soundbite. It's about genuinely finding somebody who can fill a room really quickly for whatever reason. And the danger.
Well, that's true. And I mean, that comes back to the West Wing as well. Let's try and do that, shall we?
Yeah. because Bartlett.
Because one of the themes of the show is oratory.
Yeah.
And the power of language and what a writer can do, how it can lift a room and inspire people.
Yeah.
It is so idealistic, the West Wing, in the sense of could we ever see a president like Bartlett? Mm-hmm. There's that great episode in, I can't think which one it is, series 2 or 3, called Let Bartlett Be Bartlett.
Yeah.
Where it's all about not shying away from your liberalism.
Yeah.
And that's something that we definitely do now. You know, obviously every supposedly left-wing candidate has gone further and further to the right or the center. Mm-hmm. And obviously Blairite politics is the very crystallization of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say, let's show that you are let's show that you are the person for the job because you are the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah.
And they said this thing about the White House being demystified and the impression being created that anyone can do the job.
Yeah.
And obviously Trump is the crystallization of that.
Exactly. Yeah. But isn't Bartlett? Isn't Barack Obama? You said could we actually have a Bartlett? Isn't Barack Obama Bartlett?
Do you think he is? Well, you know what? Actually, I guess he really is, because one of the things I realized when I was thinking about this podcast is that Bartlett doesn't do anything in the two terms you see him in there. There is nothing. There's very little, or even nothing, that you can look at in the series and go, "That's the legacy of the Bartlett era."
Yeah. Yeah, they don't.
He is stymied by Congress and the Senate and the Speaker of the House at every turn.
Yeah.
You know, they have that episode where they come up with this amazing tax-free education plan where they're going to make it tax-deductible. Any money spent on tuition is going to be tax-deductible, which they come up with on the back of a napkin with a guy they meet in a hotel who's taking his daughter to look at colleges.
Yeah.
And it's that wonderful kind of pie in the sky lefty thinking.
Yeah.
And then it gets gradually taken apart.
Yeah.
By that horrible sort of season five where they're just mired in nothingness and the whole thing that comes about after he's reinstated after the whole disaster with Zoe.
I think that he would get elected Bartlett, and I just like Barack Obama got elected, but I think we're jumping to the end in a way now, but my conclusion about The West Wing is that this is written by a writer who loves words and who thinks that persuasion and I've heard him say it now, but it's all about ideas and the clash of ideas, and I don't agree. I think that it does. It's great if it can be about that. But what we've seen, what people miss about Blairite politics, is it's not just about positioning yourself in the centre. That's important, but it's about Blair. It's about someone who can speak, and people at home think that they're talking to them. He was a brilliant speaker, and he looked honest. The first time I saw David Cameron speak was a time when electorally there was no way he was going to get elected in the next election, and I saw him on TV speak for the first time and I went, he's going to get elected definitely next prime minister, and they said, oh, it can't happen. Of course, he was up against Gordon Brown, and he walked it, and they said, let Gordon be Gordon about Gordon. They've said it about a lot of politicians to try and go, look, let's forget the spin. The truth is, what being elected is picking the front man of the biggest band in the world. And if you pick a bassist or a drummer, they won't get elected. It's like, that should be the prerequisite. I'm sorry, but you have to find Mick Jagger first, and then he can deal with whatever issues he wants. And Bartlett would be a great president, just like I think Barack Obama was a great president. But the next part of the story, I suppose, is how does that rock star work inside a system which is there to have checks and balances and stop them being able to achieve what they want if Congress decides, which is what it is. So Matt and I have both prepared a series of envelopes to discuss. So let's jump straight in. I'll let you go first. What's your first?
Well, decision? I think I've got quite an appropriate one, actually, which is, does the show suffer from Aaron Sorkin's taste for saccharin, or does that give the show heart?
Definitely gives the show heart. I wouldn't go against that. I heard something on the West Wing podcast, the West Wing Weekly, which is a really good podcast. I heard them point something out about series one, and that is that what you have to remember in context is that in series one, that was a completely new thing. There was no political show on like mainstream TV, and it was up against whatever was out, Dawson's Creek, you know. and so the floating oboe that comes in over certain speeches and things in the first series, they didn't really do that as much in subsequent series because they knew it was popular.
They fucking did.
They did, yeah, but they didn't do it quite as much. It wasn't quite as saccharine.
Let's not talk about that, because that's another one of my statements.
Oh, okay, fine.
But you think it gives the show heart, do you? You like that, the kind of flag waving?
I I was put off, but that was the thing, which this was the first time we came up with the four-episode rule, Matt. This is when I invented the four-episode rule, was when I went into Jamie's bedroom when we lived together. He had this thing on called the West Wing.
Okay, what's this going to? Oh, right.
He had a thong on, and he had this thing called the West Wing on. And I sat and watched it.
Watch four episodes of this, and I'm going to do some other stuff.
Well, I watched, like, two episodes, and the thing that really put me off was the music, was the patriotism, and I went, oh, God, four episodes later, I was sold completely. I do think it's necessary because you're just going to have a debate show, aren't you? If you don't have the pathos,
not necessarily, because I think basically like the debate is there throughout, and that's fine. I've got no problem with the debate, but it's the moments where, and I mean it's hard to argue because they're such beautiful moments, but it's kind of the sort of the 1,000-yard stare moments where Bartlett starts. In the first episode, it's where he says, with the clothes on their back, they came.
Oh.
And he's talking about the Cubans in the sea. And it's like, it's beautiful, but it's also, it's just like, oh, God, I'm going to chuck all over the floor. And it's like they all might as well stand there with their little tiny American flags and just wave them. Because the problem is that it's all, when those moments happen, it's generally speaking about something very American.
Yeah, but that's what is great about America. I've just seen John Stewart talking about the Trump thing. And he said nobody ever asked Trump what is great about America. He kept saying, I'm going to make America great again, but no one ever said what does make America great or what did make it great. And the truth is that it's anti-human. Like, it's a really unique country because humanity is tribal, and what they've set up there is an idea that's very different from tribalism, and you're trying to build something off the back of that. As soon as you step off a plane in America, as soon as you walk into New York or whatever, it feels so different from stepping off the plane in London or Bangkok, because it has those, it is about an ideal, it is about hope and these things which you find embarrassing because you have a poor relationship with your own masculinity. So you feel embarrassed when you feel moved.
Don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with feeling moved, but I don't feel moved by those moments.
Oh, I felt some of them. I felt moved by the on their backs, with the clothes on their backs, they came. I think it comes a bit quick in episode one.
They want a better life and they want it here.
Yeah, they do. They do.
But it's too much sometimes. Sometimes the American flag just sort of wants to wrap itself around me and strangle me.
I recently went to Dubai and Bangkok and Hong Kong. And when I went to those places, I expected, because I always go on holiday to America, I expected to never go to America again because I was suddenly going to be bit by the Michael Palin travel bug. And these wonderful places were wonderful, and I did feel like Michael Palin, but it actually made me think, God, America's a great country, because the oppression and the systems and the religion that those countries are built on, the cruelty that exists in the world. We live in a very safe country here. I got that idea of yearning to be free. I got it 100%, you know, and so I do get it, but I do feel like sometimes they blindside you, those moments. Suddenly the oboe's going, Sam Seaborn's got a tear in his eye, and everybody's, there's a couple of moments where they all say, I stand with the President of the United States.
I serve at the pleasure of the president.
And they all take it in turns. Everyone in the room says it.
And there's another one where they're all sat on Josh's apartment stoop, and they all say, God bless America.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just like, come on, seriously? Did no one say anything while you were filming this? Or was everyone just like, oh, this is such a fucking great scene. I can't believe we're getting to do this.
I'm sure there's a few outtakes. I'd kill to see the outtakes of that.
There are some good bloopers from The West Wing. There's some good ones. But it's interesting as well when you consider Martin Sheen's a very politically charged entity in Hollywood. And this still sort of leads me on. I wondered what your attitude was to the way they venerate the military in this show. The whole show is laced, like, the, you know, there's a very basic sentiment in the states that the Republicans are for defense spending and the Democrats aren't.
Yeah.
But while this show is very pro-Democrat, the respect for the military is baked into the crust.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, speaking as someone who, and it's not that I don't respect soldiers in the military, I do.
Whoa.
But I also am a pacifist, and you know,
it's difficult. It's difficult territory. Monkey.
Yeah, I'm basically French.
It is difficult territory. That no, you can say what you want on a bloody podcast, but I think, again, I think there's a real politic that exists in the world. I remember reading John Simpson's book about the wars on Saddam, which is a brilliant book, and he quoted in that, it always stuck with me, that in the notes from, I think it was Dick Cheney being taken into the bunker on 9/11, even at that moment, the notes of what he was saying was, see if we can blame this on SH, Saddam Hussein, right? Because the reality of the world is very different from what we get sold as free people who are allowed to be pacifists. And actually, they were even at that moment going, we need an excuse to take Saddam down. And Blair will have felt that way. And, you know, they'll have all had him down as, well, he's a Hitler. So if we get the chance, let's get rid of him. It's not going to cause any damage, is it? And I think the West Wing shows that quite well, in not in any detailed sense, but in the sense that if you're in that office, the questions about this is your island and you've got to make sure there are a shitload of people who want to take you down or want to challenge you or want to who've got vested interest militarily, and you're going to have to step up and make decisions about it, you know. Don't you think it would be absolutely impossible to be a pacifist and a prime minister or a president?
Well, no. I think we have to have pacifists in office. Otherwise, you end up with really scary figures like Putin and, to a lesser extent, but still a fairly large extent, Trump.
Yeah.
Who are brash and prone to conflict and reckless.
Yeah.
And there's a great episode about that in it's early on in the series, isn't it, when the president's military doctor is shot down in Amman.
Yeah.
And the president wants to bomb everyone.
Yeah.
And Leo has to talk him down. Yep. And there's a great scene actually between the two of them about the use of American military force.
Yep.
And he says, Leo says to the president, if you want to, you can conquer the world like Charlemagne. We're the only superpower left.
Yeah, it's great.
But you're going to have to kill everyone.
And you'll have to kill me first.
Yeah,
it's a great scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's about vengeance. And I think they return to it a couple of times, like when Zoe gets kidnapped. It's like he has to step himself down. And I use that argument when people say they're for the death penalty. They sort of go, you know, if someone killed your family member, I'd want to kill them. And I say, well, yeah, I would want to kill the person who killed my dad. But that's why I'm not the one who makes the decision about what happens to him, because that's vengeance, not justice.
Yeah, they say exactly that in the show, don't they?
Yeah.
But what do you think, just sticking on this topic, what do you think about the special episode they did at the start of Series 3 after 9/11?
I really liked it, but when I watched it, it was closer to 9/11, obviously. And back then, perhaps I had more... I probably believed back then much more that the media could change people's minds about things. And I think that much, much less now, having worked in it for a while. So I thought, great. And right to now, I think that country, it hurt them so badly, you know, that in a way that we can't imagine. We can't understand it.
Yeah,
yeah. We have a history of the Blitz and stuff and war. And if we'd literally never had a war like we have on that scale, and somebody did something like that in our country, I mean, I went to the 9/11 memorial. I went to the Ground Zero a couple of months ago, and walked around the museum. And it takes a couple of hours to walk around, and it really. Really hit me. It was so sad to be there. You realised, holy shit, this is a horrible mass grave that we're walking around.
Yeah.
It was the same feeling that I had going around Auschwitz, where you go, this goes from what was an absolutely terrible action movie on TV for the whole world, with the most impressive attack, and I mean impressive, that's what terrorists want, you know, they drive a truck through crowds because it's hugely visually terrifying and scares everybody. They pulled something off that was genuinely just a horrible, shocking attack. And for those of us on the other side of the world, we watched with our mouths open, and it was awful, and we feared for ourselves, but not in the way that America did. With America, it was like that feeling you have if you were to come home and your house has been ransacked and your family have been killed, you know. It's like...
Yeah, or you're just walking down the street and you get shot in the gut and you've got to try and get somewhere and recover somehow.
Yeah, and so that... And it really opened my eyes to that in a way that went, oh, I get it now. I get why this is such a big something that to us, you know, when the London bombings happened, our thing was kind of like, well, we get on with it, you know, let's crack on. And there was a big element of, they sort of said that in America as well. They went, you know, the great thing about New York is that we get on with it. But at the same time, I think it was an entirely new thing for to be attacked on their soil. It had literally never happened. I mean, Pearl Harbor had happened, but that's out on Hawaii, you know, mainland America. So I really like that. I really like that episode. And
so do I, because they're very even-handed with it, I think, given how close it was, you know, in proximity to the actual event. And it's interesting to me.
The Ku Klux Klan comparison in it.
So exactly. That's always stuck with me. Yeah. What is it? Christianity is to KKK as Al Qaeda is to Islam.
Yeah.
Yeah. That has stuck with me very, very rigidly. And the whole kind of interrogation of the guy who turns out to be fine.
Yeah, he was.
As well.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really important that a show of this stature did something like that. Mm. And I think he really undercut it. Did you watch The Newsroom?
Yep. I watched the first series, thought it was awful.
Oh, okay. Well, I watched The Newsroom and I liked it enough to watch the whole thing, basically. Mm. Because I adore his writing, and I can kind of watch anything that he's written, pretty much.
Yeah.
But there is they have an episode on that, because obviously The Newsroom is very interesting in that it shows real life events and deals with that.
Yeah.
And they have an episode which centers around the death of Osama bin Laden. Mm. And like some of the characters in the show are stuck on a plane that can't take off, and they get to break the news to the plane that Osama bin Laden is
dead. That's right. I have seen that. Yeah.
And it's awful. It's like I watched it and I was horrified at the way he dealt with it.
Right.
Because it lacked any of the nuance and the ability to see both sides of a story that the West Wing has in spades.
Yeah. But then you don't deserve two sides of the story if you're Osama bin Laden.
No, I'm not saying that he does, but...
Certainly not in that environment that we've just described. It's like, kill the fucker.
I know, but it is vengeance in that episode. It is vengeance.
Yeah, yeah.
It's America's vengeance. And I don't know what else to say about it. I don't know enough about it to talk about it eloquently, but I really didn't like it. I thought it was heavy-handed, and
it feels
it reveled in his death in a way which I found inappropriate.
Yeah, it feels completely odd to us. It was like when they found Saddam Hussein and George Bush said, we got him, you know. I don't know why, but in Britain it feels odd to us. And if you ask me if I could go back in time and shoot Hitler as an 18-year-old, I would. 100%. I'd do it.
Yeah.
So it's weird, yeah, I don't know, but I wouldn't necessarily like cheer and throw a party afterwards. I think that's the thing. That's if there's something in it's not British, then that sums it up, that moment that you've just described, I think. There's no way we're going to get through all our talking points.
But you hit one.
All right. I suppose we've kind of touched on a lot of them. In hindsight, turns out they're really arrogant. Discuss. The liberal arrogance of it all. And I mean that not dissing the show, just that when you watch it again, and I noticed this listening to the West Wing Weekly as well, when they talk about the characters in it, it's like there are actually, like Josh Lyman... I didn't really realise when I first watched it that Josh Lyman is supposed to be massively arrogant and jumps in the deep end, says things wrong, screws things up because of his super confidence. And they say that about him a lot. There's a lot of storylines about it. I just didn't notice it. They were heroes. And I think now, when I watch it now, I kind of go, wow, that is an incredibly arrogant standpoint to stand there and say, like you said before, if you say it, the people will listen. You know, it's kind of you can change people's mind with great rhetoric and things like that. It's like that's an incredibly arrogant and possibly dangerously short-sighted point of view. See Hillary Clinton.
And there's a couple. You know, there's great episodes of Josh kind of falling on his own feet. Falling on his own feet, his feet in his mouth.
Yeah.
Like when he tries to be press secretary.
Yeah. So that's so funny.
really good.
In fact, that's trumped by one thing, which is when Toby tries to be press secretary in a later series. And it's...
Well, he gradually becomes press secretary. he's trained into doing it.
But that first time, and he's just leaning over the lectern. And he's just being massively sarcastic. It's so funny. And so, I didn't realise.
CJ's watching and kind of wincing.
Yeah, everyone's just going, no! In the first watch, I just loved the characters. I just kind of thought that they were... Again, and I'm sensing from you a difference from me in a sense that I have worked... The reason I found newsrooms so difficult is, one, that my wife has worked in newsrooms for a long time. I've worked next to newsrooms for a long time. And the reality is that nobody in a newsroom ever has a debate around, can we change people's minds about this? It's so anti what their job is. Their job is to tell people...
I don't think that's what happens in the newsroom. But let's not get sidetracked by the newsroom.
That's the whole premise of the newsroom, isn't it?
No, it's not. I disagree. No.
It is. It's say something responsibly. Say something... You have a power that means that you can
It's about how you should report on something or what should be reported on. But it's not saying that you can put an incorrect or a correct spin on it. It's about... No. What is worthy of the news?
Right,
it's about holding it up to a higher standard.
Yeah, which doesn't happen, I can tell you now.
Well, you know, you haven't worked with Jeff Daniels.
And I think it's right that it doesn't happen. And this is where I perhaps differ from some of the ideals now in the West Wing. When I first watched it, I genuinely believed that if I was given the chance to be on the radio every day, I would make the world a better place. And then I went and worked on the radio every day, and I might have made the world a better place by 2 inches, but whenever I tried to do it in any slightly Sorkin-like speech or way, the audience Who's James O'Brien?
The LBC guy, you can't not have seen his...
What does L stand for in LBC?
Yeah, but these videos are shared so widely on Facebook.
I've probably seen him. What's his name again?
Look him up, James O'Brien.
Yeah.
He is... I can't think of the name of the character in the newsroom, but he's that guy at the moment. He's fantastic.
Right.
Okay. He just says everything that I say. Everything that I think. And then backs it up with facts and stuff, and in a way that makes me go, Jesus Christ.
Oh, I know you.
I didn't even realize I could possibly be like, my points could be proven.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I'm just sort of going, oh, I think this.
Yeah.
And then he comes on and goes, it's this. And hits you with it all. He's brilliant.
Well, I think that's fine, but I think LBC is also, if you, it's a cast of characters there, a lot of which aren't.
No, sure. Farage used to be on LBC.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can put somebody like him up against that background and seemingly create a kind of superhero. But what I believe is that people who listen to that very few people's minds are changed by what they
see. No, I
know.
I'm not saying you can change people's minds, but I'm saying the discussions happen. But anyway, we're talking about the newsroom now.
So how is that relevant? Well, so the West Wing itself as an entity, I thought every child should watch this. Every person in the world should be made to watch this program because it's so right and it's so correct. And there's more. Actually, it's kind of, I'm not sure whether I still think that. I do think everyone should watch it because it's amazing, but I'm not sure whether playing the West Wing to... I've spoken to many a right-wing person who are massive fans of the West Wing, who love it as a TV series, but like I was saying earlier about Trump fans, like, I'm sorry, unless your policies are affecting my town where I haven't got a job, it's tough shit, it's just telly, it's just TV, it's a comedy show.
So I
look at it differently. Else?
That's interesting. So what do you think they were arrogant then?
Definitely. I think actually Sorkin was writing them as arrogant and more...
Yeah, I think that's true, yeah.
I think
they referenced as that so many times in the show.
Yeah, and he has said he likes putting people in the writer's room that have different political opinions of him and who are different from him. So I think he did it on purpose. I think actually he'll have heard from other people in the writer's room that his views were quite arrogant leftist views, and he'll have put into the script. So he'll have kept his argument in, but he'll have started to mix it up a bit. And I think there is a big difference. I mean, even in series one, and we won't talk about Mandy, dreadful character, even in series one, actually, if you look at what Mandy does, and this is what I've learned from listening to the West Wing Weekly, Mandy, we don't like Mandy because she doesn't fit in with that saccharine cheering for the team thing. Her actual job is a political analyst.
She's a spin doctor, isn't she?
Yeah. Really? Her job is to tell you the truth of how this is polling, how this is, you know, all of that stuff. So she gets in big trouble for accidentally leaking an internal... Oh, she wrote a memo. She wrote an anti-Bartlett.
While she was working for the other side.
And she's treated like for it. But it's like, that was her job. That was her job.
Yes.
You know,
but she's not a pollster. She works with that aspect, but she's about dressing up a message.
Yeah.
And making the White House look good regardless.
You're right. She's not a pollster. Yeah. So it's almost like we don't like her characters much because she's about the theater of it. Whereas the other characters, we see that they are about, hey, it doesn't matter what the theater is. We care about that, but we're not going to change
our
message.
She is the actual political machine in that she's about dressing up something and showing it as what the public want it to be rather than what it is.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone else in the show is honest and good.
Yes.
And righteous.
Righteousness.
And she's prepared to lie and cheat and do all those things. But also, it's a badly written character. Yeah. I don't like the actress. She's got a weird way of talking. And
poor woman.
And she is the she's the worst actor in the cast.
Oh, Matt, imagine being her.
Which brings me on to my next statement.
Go on.
Which is, Dulé Hill is the third worst actor in the cast.
I disagree.
Which is an in-joke which references Howell and I's first clash about the West Wing.
I wondered if you were going to bring up good old Dulé Hill. He was very young. Like, he was 18 or something when he went in.
What I want to... This is the argument we had way back. I'm not saying that he's bad.
Okay.
But for me, it goes Wendy, I think, Wendy something, I think her name is, the woman who plays Mandy Hampton.
Yeah.
Rob Lowe.
Mm-hmm.
Dule Hill. Because everyone else is so good.
Rob Lowe.
Seriously, Rob Lowe is the weakest member of the cast.
Do you know what? Okay.
Whatever her name is.
I'm just going to agree with you. But do you know what? I'll agree with you on Robin Mandic to a point.
Who would be your third on the list? Look, you're going to say Janelle Maloney, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I think she's wonderful. But Rob Lowe's character, his he is supposed to be the biggest heart in the character. He thinks with his heart. He gets passionate sooner than everybody else. That's his.
This is nothing to do with the character for me. Rob Lowe is a bad actor.
He's just not.
He is. And he is incapable of wielding the language of Sorkin in the way that the rest of them are.
Right.
Because, and I think I'm right in this, he's the only one who's not been a stage actor.
All right.
Or wasn't a stage actor before he was in the show. I think he's gone on to do some stage stuff.
Then I agree with you entirely. And I must admit that in Parks and Rec, I felt the same way about him.
Was he in Parks and Rec? When did he show up in that?
Oh, he's great. You need to crack on with Parks and Rec,
Matt.
Oh, it's amazing, Matt.
So they all tell me.
It really is. The first, you know, I thought I'd put it to the test. I went back to the first season. Because
I watched the first series, I didn't like it.
Yeah, because everyone says, oh, the first season's no good. But I thought, I wonder if it's just because we don't know the characters. So I went back to the first season going, come on.
And it is just no good,
isn't it? And it's no good because it comes off the back of The Office. It's shot like The Office.
Exactly, yeah.
In the
Let's
second
not talk about
one,
Parks and Rec, though.
In the
Who's
second
your
one, it's
character
not.
In the West Wing?
Dule Hill. Dule Hill's
really?
Character.
Really? Charlie is your favourite character?
No, but I do love him. My favourite character has to be...
I love Charlie as well. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's bad. He's the third worst.
I just think that, like with The Get Down, like you didn't turn up for The Get Down, I just think it's because he's a person of colour and you're subconsciously culturally biased.
Yeah.
You just don't understand the way that people of colour talk.
It's good to know why I think the way I think. Thanks, Howell. In other news, I've watched the whole first episode of The Get Down now, and I really like it.
Good, good.
But let's not talk about that either. But who's your favourite? Come on, who's your favourite on the team?
Well, it's got to be Bartlett. It's got to be Bartlett, and then John Spencer, and then Josh.
Oh, interesting. So you just go in order of rank. Toby's higher up.
Toby though. I can't rank him.
I think Toby is my favourite. He was certainly my favourite after the first couple of series.
Oh, Jamie's favourite, definitely. But I think that Toby's supposed to be all of our favourites. He is.
But I love CJ as well.
Yeah, CJ's great.
I think Alison Janney is one of my favourite. You know, you get these actors who they don't often, well, or rather they never get lead roles in things.
Yeah.
They're always like a really good bit part.
Yeah.
Like there's a guy. Have you seen the film Go?
Oh, I feel like I have.
And in fact, he crops up in this. Do you remember the episode with Glenn Close in it?
Yeah.
Where she's up to be the next Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And they bring in another guy who represents the opposite on the other side.
I want to say his name's Hermosa, but it isn't.
I don't know his name, but that actor, he's one of my favourite guys that you never see do a lead role. Except he had a lead role in some really dreadful sci-fi show in the 90s.
Okay, yeah.
But he's so good in so many things.
This is all to say you love Alison Janney.
And I love Alison Janney so much for, like, she's in Juno and there's something else. What's the other thing that I really love her in?
The reason
Nurse Betty, I think she's in.
There are leading roles, and there are characters that have. Who was it I heard say this? Eddie Marsden. You know Eddie Marsden, the British actor? You absolutely know who Eddie Marsden is. Google it.
Do you mean Eddie Redmayne?
No, Eddie Marsden.
Oh, yeah, no, I do know who you mean. Yes, sorry, yeah.
Bald guy. Yeah, funny-looking guy. He said in an interview there are two types of actors. There's actors who play characters who do things and actors who play characters who have things done to them. And Rob Lowe, if you're good-looking, in a traditional sense, you play a character
who does things. Yeah.
And Rob Lowe makes up for a lot with his looks.
Yeah.
Alison Janney, who isn't the traditional good-looking thing, although you fancy the pants off her, Alison Janney is someone who has things done to them. So you often get perhaps a longer career, or more, or not in Rob Lowe's case, but you have a varied career. And she is definitely one of those, and she's great. But Toby is a kind of a mixture of the two. He's like, he's your hero whilst also being brooding, having things done to him.
Oh, I love him. He's got so much going on.
He's like
all the stuff with his brother and his dad.
Pussycat or something. What would he be if he was an animal? He's like a very clever sloth.
Oh, or a badger.
Yeah. That's what
a grumpy old badger.
So that brings me on to my next point. And we need to crack on here. Toby.
Oh, no, hang on quickly before we go on to your next point. You remember the scene where Toby and Josh have a fist fight?
Yeah.
Doesn't it break your fucking heart?
Breaks your heart. What an amazing
scene. And after Josh walks out of the room and Toby just breaks down in tears.
Yeah.
Those horrible tears that you have that you can only have after a physical confrontation.
Yeah.
Because they're tears of adrenaline and impotence and frustration. Oh, it breaks my heart.
And also, it's a fight with a brother.
They say that in that scene. Oh, fantastic.
It's just brilliant. Toby wouldn't have done what he did, people say. Discuss.
I think he absolutely would. I think there was so much wrapped up in that. With his brother and the space program, and his own arrogance, which we talked about before.
But then let me
tell
you
this. And his relationship with Bartlett as well.
Richard Schiff has said in interviews that he didn't like that. He didn't like the way that it went. He felt massively shocked and let down and upset that his character that he believed he worked on for so long would do something like that. And the only way he dealt with it was by building a different backstory in his head that he was defending somebody else, that somebody else actually did it, leaked it.
Really?
Yeah, so there you go. But listening to you've got to listen to the West Wing Weekly where they interviewed Richard.
I can't
Schiff.
Believe I don't. You know, I did listen brilliant. To the first one, and I've forgotten about it completely. I'm going to have to go back.
There's something on it now known as doing a Schiff, and that's when you go on and cry, because he went on and cried in his interview. He's such a big-hearted bloke, and if you've worked with actors, you've known people like this. He's obsessive about what he does. Aaron Sorkin and Tom, he sounds like a nightmare. They would have to come and he'd get upset about what they were going to make his character do, and he'd go off and cry in his trailer, and they'd have to go and they'd change the script based on what he said. So you've got someone who really cares, but also actors are just pawns in the game of the director and the writer, and if they decide that it's going off in a certain way, tough shit, Richard, you gotta do it. And I did like what I didn't like it happening to Toby, but I did buy that he would do it. I bought that fundamentally he was the guy who went, there are absolute rights and absolute wrongs, and we can't leave people to die in a spaceship. Here's a big one. We've got to deal with this. The West Wing, I believe, was still great after Aaron Sorkin left.
When did he leave? It was 5, right?
End of 4, he left.
End of 4,
so
right.
So Zoe gets kidnapped and...
And he runs out the door.
And he legs it. Yeah, yeah. And people, loads of people I know go, and it's like the done thing is that you can't talk about the West Wing without saying, oh, the latest series are rubbish. And as you may have heard when I was interviewing the director of photography of the West Wing for those last few series, I am a big fan of the last few series.
Me too.
Love the fact that it changed and the Santos stuff and everything. It was brilliant. I think we all wish that we could have remained for more series in that original state where you're just seeing the inner workings of the West Wing, the team working together.
I think that's one of the great strengths of the show, is that it shows the campaign as well. And it's 7 years in the White House.
The problem, in a way, is that it went too real. Dulé Hill said this about it: it felt as if in the first 4 seasons the show was written to pit the characters against the world, a romantic and Camelot experience, while the later seasons were us versus each other. And he's absolutely right. That is what it was.
It's such an awful actor.
What a great guy. What a great guy. And he's right, isn't he? It turned into real politics where everyone's out for themselves, as opposed to, hey, the family's together and we're going to take on the world.
Interesting. I don't know if I entirely agree with that. But
Well, you're wrong to not agree with Dulé. He's right.
I don't think he's ever been right in his life. I think he's a mess. that's interesting though, because there definitely is a marked change in tone and feel in season five.
You just said marked.
I did.
Wow. I've always thought it's marked.
I know it's marked. Are you reading this?
Is this podcast scripted? Because I haven't got the script.
Markhead Shakespearean pronunciation. In Tone. Yeah, I'm just pronouncing everything weird. Can you not say marked in some context?
Whatever you want. I think it's great.
I don't know. Yeah. A marked change in tone in the middle of series five, where everything is suddenly really difficult.
Yep.
And there's that ridiculous bit where they shut down the government.
Yeah.
Which is accompanied by the sound of things shutting down.
Yeah. I love that, though.
It's like the sound of slamming of jail doors.
Because they did it,
dropping
though,
of tombstones
they?
In a cave.
But they did it a couple of years ago.
They did, yeah, a couple of years ago, yeah.
It happened. Yeah. But yeah, you're right, there is a change. And I think that, unfortunately, everybody, we all grow up and die. And just like that happens in the West Wing, you can't stay president for decades. And
no, not anymore.
Things change. And that's what happened. They had to change it. But I do wish they'd have just stayed in the day-to-day stuff for like 12 series.
I thought it was really good. I thought it did a very good job of transitioning through the gears of a political administration,
yeah,
and showing the full breadth of the American political landscape.
Yeah.
Especially because, and I forget, to be honest, that Sorkin wasn't around for the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
Especially because that election, the Santos versus what the hell is his name?
God.
Vinnick. Arnie Vinnick. Yeah. The Santos versus Vinnick campaign is two righteous men going at it.
Yeah.
And they're both being kind of tugged at and tweaked by their demons on both sides.
Yeah. I love
it. The Democrats want to be ultra Democrat and the Republicans want to be ultra Republican, but the two candidates stand up for what they want.
Yeah.
And there's that one incredible debate episode.
Oh, yeah, the live one.
Which is absolutely ridiculous. Like, the idea that any two people can be this eloquent for an hour.
Yeah, I know. But well done to the actors, because it was actually live TV.
God, weren't they brilliant, though? Yeah. Jimmy Smits and...
there's a couple of screw-ups
Aaron Arkin.
There's one point in it, right, where Santos forgets a line. Jimmy Smits forgets to say a word. And it's a key word for Vinnick. Santos is supposed to say something like military. And he doesn't say the word. He just forgets his line. And Vinnick, what's his name? Alan Alda goes, military? You talk about military? And he hasn't mentioned military.
Oh, really?
I never noticed that. It's not military. The world isn't military. It's just a word. But it's a hilarious moment for the flying by the seat of your pants actors watching. So I'm glad you liked the last series, because I thought you were going to be one of those that says it. Even in this masterclass that I'm watching, Aaron Sorkin does a thing where, because he says he hasn't watched any of The West Wing after he left because he couldn't bear it, and him and a group of writers tried to write the first episode that he would have written if he'd have stayed, based on what came before and stuff. And he says to this group of young writers, he said, "Has anybody actually watched it?" And this girl goes, "Yeah, I have, but I did my best to forget it as soon as I'd watched it." And so even there, like, it's not just the fans. There really is this stink bomb of like coolery that is people going, "Oh yeah, got rubbish after Aaron left."
Oh no, not Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah,
oh,
actually,
it's terrible then.
Actually, if anything, I think whilst Aaron Sorkin's brilliant, you could hear his voice in every character in the seasons he wrote, and after that, you got something that was much more nuanced, albeit that it had to go in the way that Dulé described of people going against each other. I think.
Yeah, but there is that. The life of the administration is very weird. Like, Obama is in a very strange place now.
Yeah.
Where everything's kind of done, and it has been since the beginning of this year, really.
Yeah.
So as soon as the next campaign starts, yours is pretty much over.
Yeah.
You can't get anything done because no one wants to change anything because they're going to have a new president next year.
Yeah.
And it is a very strange time.
We
and,
need to wrap up. Have you got any big ones left?
You know what? The last thing I was going to say is, it's again about his writing, is that this show is the best example of what I like, what I maybe have ripped off as a term from someone else, but I like to call information dumping. And if I'm sure you know what I mean by that. Exactly. Yes, that's exactly right. Exposition.
Yeah.
Wherein, like, they are dealing with incredibly complex things in some of these episodes.
Yeah.
And yet they have these characters who exist and who are believable in asking about what's going on.
Yeah.
So they're able to trot out, it's one of the things I always say to people when they watch it is they go, oh, I just don't understand all the political stuff. And I say, watch it till the end of the episode.
And there
will be a scene where they walk you fucking through it.
Yeah.
And but often, it makes sense.
And because there's the Josh and Donna.
They're walking someone else through it. Yeah, Josh and Donna. And there's a great episode about the census where CJ comes to Sam at the beginning of the episode and says, I don't know anything about the census.
Yeah.
And he says, you're the press secretary. And she goes, yeah, I've been winging it. And it's like, you've been winging it in meetings with the president? And she's like, yeah, I should probably not do that. So can you fucking help me? Kind of thing.
There's some great, that's what, another thing that's great about Alison Janney is she does comedy really well. It's really
good. She's so funny. You know, one of my favorite, I'm just going to eulogize about Alison Janney. Do you remember the episode called Privateers? Which is where it's in series five, and it's Amy's first day as the first lady's chief of staff.
Yeah.
And they have that meeting with Marion Cokesworth Hay of Marblehead.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And, and they're laughing.
the woman stands up and goes, I'm Marion Cokesworth Hay. And CJ just bursts out laughing. Yeah. She's got the best laugh I've ever heard.
Yeah, you love her.
She's wonderful. I do love her.
Yeah,
very,
she is
very
great.
Much.
Two final points from me that I'll merge into one and you can answer them both. They could do another series, discuss, and West Wing changed your life, discuss.
They definitely could do another series and it did change my life because it got me interested in American politics.
Me too. It was brilliant. For everything that I've criticised because I'm now older and more jaded, it's still the world that I think about more than anything when American politics happens at all. You know, you kind of think that those characters are still there in the West Wing.
And I would love to see another series. I don't think they should do it, though.
How could they do it now that they all look old? What could they do?
No, they couldn't do it with the same characters.
Oh.
Well, maybe they could do the odd one here and there. Like, Josh could still be going. But I think, obviously, Toby's done. Bartlett's done.
Yeah.
Dulé Hill could be in it. And I love Josh Molina, actually. I think I really liked when they brought him in instead of Sam. It was like, oh, great, this makes sense. He's a big Sorkin through runner, actually. He's in a lot of his stuff.
That's right. That's right.
You know he's in Few Good Men?
Yes, yeah. I was in the stage series first, wasn't he? I think the stage play
of A Few Good Men.
Was A Few Good Men on stage?
It was, but
I think it was. Yeah, he was in that.
Many years later, which had Sam Seaborn in the...
That's right.
It had Rob Lowe in the Tom Cruise.
Yeah, he's great, and you hated him because you wanted Sam to come back at first, although you didn't because you were
I
going,
didn't, no, like, I was great. I was like, oh, brilliant, Sam's gone. We got this great new guy. I love him. And he was in Sports Night as well. Have you ever seen Sports Night?
Yeah, a little bit, but I need to watch it. I need to...
great show.
Yeah. Well, you get just go to Parks and Rec Season 2 and I promise you it'll change your life almost as much as The West Wing. And Ron, who is a character in that, appears in The West Wing, but I won't tell you who he is.
Ron.
I will tell you who he is. The character Ron in Parks and Rec is played by... Jesus, I can't believe I forgot his name. I've seen every episode. He plays... Do you remember when they do the Block of Cheese Day and they have people there?
Oh, yeah. I do know who you're talking about, and he's the one who talks about... Plukey, is it? The wolf?
The highway, yes. Yeah.
The wolf's only highway.
That's great.
Ron Swanson.
Yeah, Ron Swanson.
Yeah.
And also in the Gilmore Girls, circa 1990 whatever, or 2001, Abed is in a scene.
No way, Danny Pudi.
Danny Pudi's in a scene, and he's just like a little extra. Maybe he's got one line, and he's just totally like non-confident actor. It's really cute. Amazing. Looks exactly the same. I'm sure he's about 55.
That's cool.
So there we go. But we'll come back to Community. I'm about 10 episodes off finishing season 6, 7, the last season. So.
Oh, wow, you're further ahead than me.
Oh, my God. Oh, well, we need to do it. Crack on, Matt.
No, I'm not going. No, it died. It's dead.
What? We'll come back to it. It's not that.
There are 3 seasons of Community.
There's not. You're wrong.
There are 3.
You're absolutely wrong. There's some great stuff in season five, because he came back to it.
No, you're fucking wrong. I watched series 5. It's shit.
Dan Harmon came back.
I know he did.
Season four.
No, series four is terrible. That's the one without Harmon, and series 5 is even worse.
Oh, there's some great.
It's got Harmon, and it's dead. It's all dead.
You're wrong. There's some great stuff. Yeah, there's some great stuff.
Perfect 3 series.
Right, well, good. Thank you. This has been great. We could have gone on for 5 more podcasts about The West Wing. Definitely.
God, I love The West Wing.
It's so good. And
I think it is the first on my list into the spaceship.
Me too. What a
What are your other two?
I've always said Chuck. Mad Men. Definitely Mad Men.
You know, just because you've always said Chuck doesn't mean you can't change your mind.
I know, well, that's what I'm considering, but Mad Men is...
I think you should.
Definitely up there. And I can't think now. But, yeah, Chuck's up there. So you got to
I went for The Wire and Cheers.
Oh, nice. Cheers, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, well, actually, I'll trump Cheers with...
Frasier.
Frasier, yeah.
Well, it was between Cheers and Frasier for me.
It's gotta
be Frasier. And Seinfeld, those 3.
Frasier's the perfect comedy, that's what I say. Flawless.
I think you are not far off the truth. And in fact, if Cheers didn't have series 1 and 2, I think it would be perfect as well.
Well, there you go. Clearly, much more to discuss on future episodes
of
the Box Set Pod. Would you want to come back next week and join me and Jack to talk Sopranos?
Sure.
Let's do that. And then we'll see if Jamie wants to join us again after that.
Okay.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. And good luck with Chuck. Do crack on, because it gets better and better and better.
Don't see it, man. It's just not doing anything for
you. Yeah, it does. See you next week, Sopranos.
Cheers, Al.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks very much. I hope Dooley
Hill. That's good, wasn't it?
Never listens to this. Yeah. Yeah.
Poor old Dooley Hill. I actually really like him in it.
Yeah, I know you do.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.